play. Sir. Yeah. Yeah.
Kane is in the building, nigga.
Yeah. It's alright, already the show goes on all night. Till the morning we dream so long. Anybody ever wonder when they will see the thunder? Just remember when you come up.
And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Always Pressing PGA DFS podcast, previewing the 2019 Arnold Palmer Invitational. Before we get into that, check out the podcast on Twitter at Always Press DFS. I am at BD Intrick, and my co-host, as always, you can find him on Twitter at DFS Golf Gods. Jesse, how are we doing?
I mean, I'm doing all right, dude. How are you today?
Well, just a beautiful Monday, getting ready for more rain. Yeah, that's about it.
There's snow on the ground here, so... whatever. Yeah.
That's why I don't live there. But but yeah, no, it's been a weird year, man. Between the snow all that you guys are all getting, and it's actually raining for reals out here for a while. It's getting weird. It's getting really weird. But I'm ready for it all to kind of stop, even though we need it.
Yeah, dude, I'm ready for some summertime.
I'd like some relative just normalcy of my life pretty soon. It'd be nice. But people don't come to here now. This is
no, Dr. they Phil. Don't believe it or not.
Yeah, surprisingly, they really don't give a shit about how we're doing. But let's recap the Honda Classic, and it was kind of a massacre as we'd expect. There was a lot of wow moments. The MDF really screwed a lot of things up. But all in all, in the end, killer Keith Mitchell, the guy we've talked about many times on this show, he came through, made the putt on 18 to get the W. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, dude. I mean, he played well. Obviously, that it was, you know, pretty much what we expected, is to be a make a par, and it's a good score on most of those holes. A lot of the scoring was done on that front nine, a few birdieable holes on the back there. But yeah, going into after he took the lead, going into Saturday, him and him were in the last group there, and we were talking about this before the pod. But you know, I think it was pretty predictable that they would both kind of back up. And I really think that was a good thing for Keith. He kind of got the pressure off of being in that final group, and was able to, you know, go out there and shoot three under par. He almost was under par every day of the week. He shot 70 on Saturday in that last group, which is very respectable. But it did, you know, he did lose the lead, and it backed him up a couple groups. And anyways, making that putt on, you know, that's the last thing I ever expect Keith Mitchell to do, is make a clutch putt on the last hole, especially like a 15 footer. I mean, I wouldn't feel good about him making a 3 footer most of the time. So good for him, dude. You know, yeah, he played well. And there was that leaderboard was freaking stacked.
Yeah, the stones on Keith, it was good to see, because I remember last year in his first real year, I got to watch him at Pebble, and He hit amazing shots, like the par 5-6 from up from down below. He'd launch it. He had a good looking eagle putt. He 3-putt for a par. Like, it was, I'm watching the guy, and you could watch him and realize how close he is. And that's how I feel about Cam Champ, getting to watch him this past year. If he can figure out his short game consistently, he's going to be scary. And with a guy like Keith, and that's why we say a lot on the show when we talk about our DraftKings picks, you know, we would never be shocked if certain guys won. There are some guys you're like, there's no, like, we just want to top 10 it, hopefully. But right. There's a handful of guys that have that in their skill set. That's why we always kind of like recommend them, to give you that really big waiver of be prepared for like a +6 miscut. Like, this is very possible. And Keith is great at that. Like, this week he's at the Arnold Palmer. Zero people would be surprised if he missed the cut this week. Zero. But that's just the way it works.
Right. Well, I mean, look at a guy like Luke List, who's very comparable to Keith Mitchell. Both can get to the green very well. They just struggle with the short stick, which, you know, is the hardest part of golf. So it's understandable. But, you know, Luke List had some success here last year, finished second, you know, lost in the playoff to Justin Thomas, missed the cut here this year. So it's definitely not surprising. But at the same time, it is surprising that, I didn't see it coming this week. I know a lot of people out there did, and I saw some people with some bets on it. So, I mean, good on those guys for having the foresight for that. But, I mean, you know, he overcame Brooks, Ricky, you know, Ryan Palmer had a hell of a freaking Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Well, and just the last part on Keith, and we can move on, is that's why when there seems like there's weeks after week after week where we kind of recommend the same guy, it's because there is that skill set there.
Right.
And it's like you stick with the well, because it's golf such a volatile sport. but the guys we really stick with more often than not, we know are good enough to make it happen. And I laughed because I listened like the first 5 minutes of Mayo's pod before we started here. And he's talking about how he recited from his preview podcast, how he said Keith Mitchell will get his first win this year and it'll be on Bermuda grass. And he was pissed off because it's the first time in his life he did not bet on Keith Mitchell on Bermuda. Right. Always stick to your guns, people. So yeah. It's the way the sport works. That's why the whole process over results.
It's tilting as fuck. I mean, it's like literally we're out here trying to predict the hardest sport there is to predict. I mean, there's so many variables and so many different things that could happen. That's what makes it so much fun too.
Yeah, and this week was even crazier because, like you said, all the scoring is on the front and the carnage is on the back. So you'd feel like you're really moving up and your screens are green, and then all of a sudden the guy would be like 400, now he's back to 2 over. And like it was just such a roller coaster ride. But I was pumped for Keith. On this show, we talk about it all the time. We love seeing these young guys win. But we were so, so close to a Ricky versus Brooks playoff, which would have been just an electric factory for a tournament that we're used to having big names at. Some backed off because of the new schedule. Having those two in that playoff would have been epic. What's your just overall thoughts on them? Because one thing that I'm really mad at myself for is Brooks even said it like after Thursday or Friday, I should have registered the way I read Brooks. He said, of course I can play well here. It's like a major tournament. It's like a U.S. Open. It's how hard it is. And I don't know why that didn't register, but what was your thoughts on Ricky and Brooks?
Yeah, it's not surprising that they were there on Sunday. Ricky struggled in the beginning of Sunday there, and he should have really – he probably should have won it. He hit some really terrible shots, but it doesn't – you know, it's obviously not a bit surprising. What is surprising is fucking Vijay Singh finishing sixth place and being in the final group on Sunday. You know, I mean, like, it was a wild week. The cut was – on Friday night was epic. I mean, for the longest time, everybody, you know, I was getting some DMs and some messages from people. Oh, it's, you know, it's not going back to two. And I was like, just wait. I mean, there's way too many people to go through that bear trap. And it ended up getting back to two, and Woodland had to make a 20 footer on the last to get in. And I mean, that was an epic cut sweat. Like that's what it's all about, man. Like with PGA DFS.
Yeah, it was the whole Thursday. We're in the Slack chat, and I'm like, God, my three lineups look really good. And I even prefaced, and it's all going to come crashing down on Friday because this is how it goes. And I was still looking great until, like, Scott and two other guys hit the bear trap, and all of a sudden it went boom. And that's just the fun of it all. That's why we keep doing it.
Scott was super surprising to me.
Apparently
he changed up his putting.
That would have been nice to know. Instead of using the normal kind of longer putter he uses, that he's, you know, not the legal one, but the legal long putter now, he switched back to just a regular. I'm horrible with the names I'm using right now, but there was a whole article on it. He switched back to a different putter after putting pretty much the best he's putted in a long time back-to-back weeks. He changed his putter. Don't know why. Maybe because he changed grass types from Poa to Bermuda. I don't know, but it made no sense to me.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense to me either. It was that was a tilting miscut for sure. That was a great golf tournament, and it usually is, just because anytime you have scoring that low, you know, it's going to bunch up the leaderboard, and that's what happened.
Last thing we can talk about here before we move on is Adam Schenck. You know, a couple weeks ago, there was all these penalties, people talking penalties in Arizona. They've kind of left off the gas. Pebble, you didn't hear about it, Genesis, so on and so forth. Well, now Schenck gets one, and there's a couple of bad things about it. A, I think it's ridiculous if you think a guy's lining a guy up out of the bunker. Like, let's be real about that.
Yeah.
And B, they let him know 24 hours later. It's like, okay, if you're going to penalize me, penalize me. But if I would go, it's like I'm a baseball guy, and you get the challenge of play, but if a pitch is thrown, you can't challenge it anymore. Like, if I'm getting penalized, penalize me. There's rules officials everywhere. So someone should let a guy know, maybe not like before his next shot, but before he leaves the golf course, it might be nice to know those kind of things. But because in theory, he probably signed a bad scorecard if they want to be real anal about that. But I guess they can't get him there. But what was your thoughts on the Schenck penalty? Because it was pretty crappy.
Yeah, it's the rules got to have some clarification. Did you see Justin Thomas tweet about it?
I was about to ask. Did you see his whole back and forth with the USGA?
That's really odd to me that they would respond to him on Twitter like that, in that fashion, especially saying, you know, hey,
do they understand how many Justin Thomas fans could go ape shit on Twitter? Like, do they understand the cesspool that Twitter is?
I'm not sure if I don't know what the thought process, you know, I thought maybe it was fake, but then you know, Golf Channel and everybody else picked it up and treating it as a real, it's just really odd. But either way, there's just got to be some clarification about some of these rules. And I just, the whole lining somebody up, I don't understand. I don't know. It just, to me, it's like the point of it, I guess, is to not give you an advantage. But if everybody can do it, like, who's taking an advantage? I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, it's,
yeah. No, we. I mentioned on our Pebble Pod that I know a guy that plays. He was part of the Cebu Kim this year, and he was playing with us in our men's group on Sunday in our little skins game. And we were having a couple drinks after the round, and we literally started asking him because the Shank news came out. I think it was Sunday morning or something, and we were asking him, like, "What's the deal with this?" Because you had to go play with these guys. Like, what's going on? And he started laughing. He says they basically all hate it. They all don't really know what's going on. Like, it's just a long laundry list of it. But the one thing he did say is, well, we all put with the flag in because we're amateurs and they want to hurry up the pace of play. That's kind of how, but like the lining up thing, he had no answer for. He's all, it's everything else you hear. It's like, it's supposed to be for lining up putts and the LPGA tour, but all these other guys, like when your caddy's sitting there holding the yardage book, that's what he's paid to do. Like, he's not telling you, like, it gets ridiculous.
Yeah, it's odd. The worst part is, though, I mean, you're letting the guy know 40 minutes before he tees off and he's in contention in the final. Well, I mean, he was. I think he was 4 under when he started the round. So,
yeah, pretty
cool. Just an odd way to handle it. And there's just got to be some kind of, they got to figure some shit out.
Yeah. Hopefully they finish it out this week. Let's go to the Arnold Palmer Invitational, one of the really, really awesome tournaments. It's at Bay Hill. We'll get into that in a minute. 123 golfer field, but still 70 make the cut. And sadly, Tiger Woods has already withdrawn with a neck issue. The back is fine. He tweeted out his back is totally fine. It's just his neck. You know, they're not related at all. They don't connect at any point. There's nothing that goes on there. So everything's fine. Don't read too much into that. But Jesse, let's start with some past event history.
Yep. So obviously Arnold Palmer Invitational. It's played every year in Orlando, Florida. I closed down my tab that had all my past event winners there, so bear with me 1 second. All right, so last year, Rory McIlroy, hot putter, if you remember, on Sunday, could not miss if he hit it on the green. He won by 3 shots over Bryson. Year before that, Mark Leishman was the winner. He shot 11 under. Rory shot 18 under in 2018. Leishman last year, 11 under, 1 shot over Charlie Hoffman and Kevin Kisner. 2016, Jason Day, 17 under, 1 shot over Kevin Chappell. And Tiger Woods has won here 8 times, but he's not playing. Like you said, he already withdrew. So,
well, that sucks. Yes, you mentioned it's at Bay Hill in Orlando, Florida. It's been at Bay Hill since 1979. It's a par 72, 7,420-yard golf course. It used to be a little shorter. They have extended it over the years. We kind of already hinted at it since being in Florida. Bermuda greens, very, very fast here, though. They redid them in 2015. Lots of slope, lots of speed. But Paul Casey's been quoted as saying, if you can't putt here, you probably can't putt at all because it's some of the best greens you'll ever play on. So a lot to like here. It's not as bad as the Honda when it comes to water, but water is on 8 of the holes. A lot of water, dog legs built around the water, so you can't just bomb and gouge. The finishing hole 18 is one of the hardest holes in the course. Lots of water around the green with bunkers on the other side of the green. So it does come into play. It is an issue at times. You need to be really good off the tee. You'll hear a lot of three woods, a lot of long irons. And most importantly, your approach in from like 175 to 200, kind of similar to what we talked about last week. Like, you can't just, you gotta be smart about it and make your approach in. Par fours, pars are good. You want to score on the par fives. Each par five averages over 1% birdie percentage per golfer per tournament, or per the field per tournament. The 16th hole, definitely a eagle hole. Over 6% of the field will eagle it. 55% will birdie it. So if you're not scoring on par fives, you're in big, big trouble. That's how Tiger's done a lot of damage there. You get your pars on your par fours, you birdie and eagle the par fives, you'll be in contention come into the week. Other than that, also around the green, when they redid them in 2015 and a little bit prior to that, but mainly in 15, there's more runoffs around it. So if you're not hitting the greens, your short game, your chipping up and down game will become much, much more in play. Other than that, just play smart and stay out of the water. And it runs out a lot. So you don't have to hit driver, but your long irons and everything, they'll still run out in the fairway. So your distance won't be as hampered there. What kind of key stats are you looking at this week, Jesse?
Yeah, it's, I mean, pretty similar to last week. As far as it's more accuracy now. I'm switching off of bogey avoidance to birdie or better, because you do have to make the birdies, especially on the par fives. I mean, the average winning score here is getting up in the teens. So if you're going to have the winner, they got to be able to make birdies. Waiting par fives again, proximity from 200 plus, a lot of long par threes, and then a lot of long approaches in general. And then proximity, like you said, 150, 175 as well. And that's ball striking and then greens in regulation too.
All right, let's do a little fan share sports before we get at it. If you're looking at guys coming in with good recent form, top DraftKings scores in the last three events, you're going to see some similarities, but it's the big boys. You got Justin Rose, Rory, Ricky, Jason Day, Poulter, Phil, but then Matt Every is sixth on the list there, or seventh on the list there, which is pretty surprising. Tiger, which they didn't take him out yet. But then CH3 and Henrik Stenson. He's been playing really bad golf, but his last three events, he comes in 10th in this field. If you want to go back six events, get a little better sample size. You got a lot of the same guys, but Justin Rose, Ricky, Bryson comes up on this list. Rory, Jason Day, Tiger still there, but Phil, CH3, Adam Hadwin is ninth, and then Mark Leishman is 10th. Couple new names there to keep in mind when you think about recent form. I did a little quick search for them. Last three events on Bermuda greens in Florida, par 72s, 7,400 yards or more. It's interesting. You got Rory, Bryson, but then Rose, Leishman again pops up here. Hoffman's on here. One to keep in mind, Taylor Gooch is on here, and Francisco Molinari. So a couple different names to keep an eye on as well. And then just the last three events here at the API that have DraftKings scoring. Rory, of course, on average, almost 109 DraftKings points. We got Bryson. Hoffman again makes the list. Patrick Reed's only played here once, but 94 DraftKings points. You got Justin Rose, Leishman, Woods, Day, Gooch again. And if you do average birdies over the last three rounds of this event, Patrick Reed had 22 birdies here last year. So that's why DraftKings scoring was big. Taylor Gooch, 21 birdies here last year. Rory's averaging 20 per round. Hoffman averaging 20. Bryson, Ricky. Chesson Hadley's averaging 18. Benny Ann's, of course, history guy here, is averaging 17 birdies. So when it comes to the DraftKings scoring, you can look at that. And then when you look at eagles, Brandon Harkins, Aaron Wise, and Bryson DeChambeau are averaging 2 eagles per tournament at this event. So something to keep in mind when you're looking at your DraftKings scoring. That is all I really have when it comes to fan share. So if you're ready, Jesse, I'm ready. Let's get into the DraftKings scoring here. We got a handful of guys over 10K. Got Rory McIlroy at 11-4, Justin Rose at 10-7, Ricky Fowler at 10-4, and Brooks Koepka at 10-2. Where are you looking at on this?
Yeah, I mean, I really wish Tiger wouldn't have withdrawn. I think he would have taken a lot of ownership, even though he was second highest priced. So I think most of that probably goes to Rose. I like Rose a lot still. It doesn't really matter to me. I'll still play Rose quite a bit. He missed one cut in Saudi Arabia, which was during that whole Saudi Arabia fiasco they had over there. I'm not worried about that at all. But he has 2 wins in his last 3 starts, and his worst finish was at the Desert Classic, which was 34th. That's his worst finish. It's only his finish outside the top 10 since September, since the Dell Technologies. I mean, just playing really good golf. I don't think he'll be overlooked, but I like him quite a bit. And then Rory as well, obviously won here last year. I just feel like he's trending back there again. And I don't know if people will be off him because he's the highest price, because he's the defending champion. I hope so. I'm going to be all over Rory again this week. So those are my 2 of the 4. There should be 5, but Tiger withdrew.
Yeah, you got to love Rory. You know, obviously defending champion, T4 the year before, T27, T11. You want that T4 first place type finish. Coming in amazing form. We've been all over him since he's been, a second T4, T5, T4 in his last 4 events. Zero problem with Rory whatsoever. I think he's a great play. If he finds the putter, he could run away with this one. So I'd be all over that. Justin Rose, as you mentioned, is coming in playing pretty well, and he has great course history here. So I have no problem with him. But I think getting back on Brooks could be very interesting. I think he gets overlooked in this area yet again. People just for some reason don't want to play Brooks. I don't get it, but it's just the way it is. Doesn't have great course history here. You know, DMP, a miscut, DMP, a withdrawal, and a T26. That's his history here. So it's not like out of this world great, but still playing pretty well, and he's coming off a T2 last week. So I think if you want to be contrarian, you go there, but I think Rose and McIlroy, as pretty much stated already, are the ways to go here. I love Rory this week. If you want to go stars and scrubs, zero problem with it whatsoever. Let's get into the 9K range where you can do a lot of damage. There's a lot of really, really good golfers here. You got Jason Day at 99, Bryson at 97, Leishman at 95, Matsuyama at 93, Phil at 92, Fleetwood at 91, and Molinari at 9,000. You could really build a lot here. Where do you like to go, Jesse?
Yeah, I'd imagine this is probably the chalkiest range. I think that probably your average, like, DraftKings guy who's just plugging in a lineup in the $5 will start in this area, I would think. And I think Tommy Fleetwood's going to be pretty chalky. I like him just fine. Bryson's a great play at 97. If you start with your lineup there, you know, I'm not 100% sure how high owned he will be, but Day's probably the pivot off of him. Good, really, really good course history. I mean, for Jason Day, a fourth and a fifth in the last two starts, and really hasn't finished outside the top 25 since he missed a cut at the Dell Technologies back in September. He's playing good golf and probably trending in the right direction. So now is the maybe the time to hop on. Hideki, he's got okay course history, 49th, 45th, 6th, and 21st in his last few starts here. But again, playing really well again. So it'll be interesting to see who is the highest owned in here. I don't know how much of these guys I'll actually play because I'm probably going to be pretty heavy Rory and Justin with some stars and scrubs. So I might have to just quit. You know, if I'm starting here, I'm starting probably with Day as my number one play in this region.
Yeah, I think Day is a sneaky nice play. I think he's a really good pivot play here. I think at $9,900, I think it's very, very good. 6 of 8 cuts made here. Obviously, he's won before and coming in great form, T4, T5. So I think he's a really interesting player because everyone's going to go to Bryson, as you were talking about. $9,700 is just too cheap for him. Finished second here last year. He's coming in great form. You know, he slipped up a bit at the Genesis, but in Mexico. But come on, the guy's been playing such good golf. One tournament, it's not going to distract me here. And before he finished second here last year, everyone wondered if he'd ever be anything more than just a scientific nerd. So I think there's a lot to like with Bryson at 97, but the ownership could just be out of this world crazy. The other guy that I like, Fleetwood at 91, like you mentioned, Leishman's a sneaky pivot play as well, just because of course history. But I'd rather go to Day if I have to. But the guy I really like here, no surprise to me, it's listening to the podcast enough, is Francesco Molinari. I know he's kind of taking a kind of slower schedule, but he's still playing great golf. T17 in his last tournament he played, and he's made 6 of 6 cuts here, including 3 top 10s. I really like that consistency. If you're playing cash this week, I have no problem starting a lineup with Molinari. I think he's definitely a guy down here at 9,000 that could win this thing. And that's where I'm going to go here. You could even put a Molly with, you know, a Justin Rose and still have a pretty successful lineup. So I love the Day pivot. I think Bryson's a great play. I'm just really curious on the ownership there. But then I go down to Molly at 9,000. There's a lot I like there.
Hey, I don't mind Molinari at all. I think that's – I actually had him checked off. I just didn't mention him because I wanted you to be able to have all the glory.
I appreciate that. But I think he's going to – you know, he's done his European Tour thing. He's done his Ryder Cup. I think it's his turn. He did a little bit on the PGA even last year, obviously. But I think he's in for a pretty good run here pretty soon that will be fun. We've always hoped it would be Fleetwood, but I think Molly's going to get it in. So that's where we go there. Let's go into the 8K, and this is another interesting one. You got Patty Reed at 89, Billy Ho at 88, Hatton at 87, Chucky Three Sticks at 86, Berger at 85, Keegan at 84, Kokrak at 83, Lucas Glover playing great golf at 82, Henrik at 81, Poulter at 8,000, and Bubba at 8,000. Where are you looking down here, Jesse? Because another solid range.
Yeah. Yeah, really good range. Obviously, this field's loaded. It's an invitational field, so I believe 125 start. And they still cut down to 70. So 6 of 6 percentage is going to be higher than what we're used to so far this year. And when I say higher, I would imagine closer to 20%, where we've been 10% or less in most events. So just keep that in mind kind of when you're making lineups. You got to get the high upside guys. Starting toward the top for me, Charles Howell, I think, is a totally fine play. His stats line up. So does Keegan's. Both of them are obviously the ball strikers. You know, can they get the putter going? That's a giant question. Kokrak's price to me is odd. I mean, I know he played okay last week, but like, I'm confused how he gets up to 8,300 because he was in the sevens last week, right? And this field is much stronger this week, so I'm confused, especially since he missed the cut here last year. And I mean, he's not doesn't have great course history. Finished ninth last week, so you know that's fine. I just don't know how much I can stomach paying $8,300 for him. Lucas Glover, man, you know, I've been on Lucas Glover, and I got him at decent ownership last week. He was 10% owned. He finished fourth with a solid 66 on Sunday, and the wind, when the wind picked up, he kind of started playing better. I just don't know if he's going to be chalky. And if he's going to be chalky, I just don't know if I want to play him. But it's hard to get off of him at this point as much as I've played him. Low price decrease this week, which makes sense, unlike Kokrak, who had the price increase. Anyways, my favorite play, Ian Poulter, $8,000. Give me all the Poulter. I know he's not done that great around here. 41st, 41st, 46th, 21st, 20th, 21st. But in his last three events, and these are like not like shitty European events, most of these, well, all of them aren't, third, sixth, third, sixth, and then 33rd at in Sony is just, I want all the Ian Poulter at $8,000.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I won't go too much more in it there. I think Poulter is a phenomenal play at $8,000. I think he's a cash game target of mine and definitely GPP play as well. CH3, I absolutely love it, $8,600. The course history narrative plays phenomenal here, and he's playing just really, really good golf. He's made 16 of 18 cuts here with the top 10 involved there, coming in really good form. So I like CH3 at $8,600. You can look at a Keegan at 84. You mentioned Glover. The other guy I really like here, and I think he's a really good GPP play, is Patrick Reed. You know, T14, T22, a 56th, and two T13s in his last five events. Finished T7 here last year. I was talking about how he had 22 birdies here last year, over 90 DraftKings points for a seventh place finish. He's he likes to play in these big fields where he kind of gets forgotten. And to me, $8,900 for Patrick Reed, who just won the Masters last year in a field like this, I'm not saying he needs to be more than Molinari and Fleetwood and those guys, but being outside that 9K range kind of stood out to me a little bit. Maybe it'll affect his ownership, but this is a guy that could definitely make some noise. I think $8,900, he's a very, very good GPP play with some big-time upside. So I like Patty Reed to be a kind of contrarian-type play there. Let's get to the 7K range, loaded 7K range, Jesse. So I'm not going to name them all off, but why don't you give me some of the guys 7,500 and above that you're liking this week?
Yeah, I mean, Luke Liss is definitely interesting. Missed the cut last week. You know, he's a better Keith Mitchell. He's missed a lot of cuts this year. But if he gets it going, his putter was just broken last week, which it is most weeks. $7,900. I'm not sure how popular he'll be, but I feel like coming off the missed cut, he's a better play than if he made the cut last week and finished 50th. So I don't mind him at all. Adam Hadwin is super interesting to me. He finished sixth here in 2017. Made a bunch of cuts in a row since the Safeway on tour. Not super high finishes, but I just feel like he can kind of play well here. Zach Johnson. I'm never a Zach Johnson guy, but I was just looking over some kind of course history things, and the dude plays well around here. When's the last time he missed a cut here? What's his cut? I'm only going back to 2013
here. I got him right here. ZJ. If I just knew my alphabet. There it is. 14 of 15 made cuts. I only got the last five up here, but
yeah,
he's been lights out. Five top tens in that time span.
Right. I mean, since he made the cut and just kind of backed it up on Sunday. He started really well last week at the Honda and then just kind of backed up. And we're getting a $1,000 price decrease on him this week. So I think he's super interesting at $7,700. Michael Thompson at $7,600. He kind of backed it up really well. Finished 16th at the Honda Classic, 7th Genesis 10. All right. Michael, the last thing I was going to say was Michael Thompson. He played well last week, and I'll be back on him again this week. Are we going to stop at 7,500?
Yeah, stop at 75.
Yep.
Yeah, I echo the Luke List sentiments. He's an outstanding GPP play week in, week out, and I agree. He's usually popular and stuff like this, but coming off the cut could help a ton. I think Siwoo Kim is an interesting play. Not always a favorite, but, you know, he's coming in third in a T4 his last two events. You know, he's made two or three cuts here. He didn't miss cut last year. So, you know, GPP only, but Siwoo's really playing some good golf right now. So he's got my attention. I like the Hadwin call, maybe more cash than GPP, but he's got some upside there. ZJ just as well. You know, course history narrative, if you just want guys to make the cut, ZJ fits that to a T. You know, last week, Jason Duffner was this kind of guy. Kevin was talking about him in the Slack chat. He makes the cut. It is what it is, because there's a reason these guys make cuts. For some reason, yeah, at these events, they know the course very well. I love the Thompson call as well. I'm curious to see how popular he's going to be, but he wasn't as popular last week as I thought he'd be. He was chalky for a Matt Thompson, or Michael Thompson, I mean. I call him Matt all the time. Michael Thompson, but still, he's still a very, very good play here. The other two guys, I can't wait to see the ownership, because I was tilted when I saw these prices. One was Benny on at $7,500. Made three straight cuts here, including a T14 last week. But more importantly, my guy, who I pretty much preach every time he's on an event, Rafa Cabrera-Bello, RCB at $7,500. Yes, it's his first time here, but he's been T19, T25, T22, a missed cut, and a T11 in his last five events. This guy is an amazing ball striker. He doesn't have to hit his driver. I'm worried he's going to be chalky at $7,500, but he just stands out like a premier player in a really weird price. Like, him and Kokrak should be switched. That would make sense to me.
Yeah, that would be too.
RCB at 75, I just don't get. I mean, I might just eat the chalk. I might pivot, come to the Slack chat on Wednesday when we talk more ownership and other plays. But I am really curious. I know he's a first-time guy, so we're a big course narrative group here, a course history narrative, and that kind of plays off there. But I'm really curious to see what the deal is with that pricing. Maybe he just goes and gets blitzed and Kim misses the cut by 10 strokes. I don't know. But $7,500 makes no sense for a guy. His ball striking ability, his approach game, his around the green game, his birdie abilities, I don't get it. He can destroy par fives. So I'm really curious about that pricing there. All right, below $7,500, Jesse, who you liking down there?
I'll start up top there with Haotong Li at $7,400. I think he has the upside. He finished 54th here last year, but I think he has the upside to get inside the top 20, maybe potentially a top 10. Finished 19th in Mexico, which was, a 60, 70-man field or whatever, but second and 12th in his two starts before that. I mean, he's a top 10 machine, so I feel like if he stays over here in the States, and he will have a breakthrough performance and people will start trying to figure out who he is, and then, you know, obviously he'll get more chalky. So I think now that is the time to hop on him at $7,400. Just looking over some stats, I think Thorbjørn Olesen is a terrible way to say that name, but he kind of fits. Missed the cut here in 2017, but finished seventh in 2013. Kiradek, man, I don't know what to do about him at $7,100. You know, that dude, the price is right. So he missed the cut here last year. Coming in, he was playing really well. He finished sixth here in 2016 and sixth here in 2015. Coming off a missed cut last week at the Honda Classic, I did not play him because I did not think he was going to succeed last week. Typically, when he misses a cut, he doesn't miss two in a row. Now, he did miss two in a row from the Abu Dhabi to the Farmers, but that's, you know, flying all around the world. So I don't know how much stock I put into that, but I think this might be the week to play him, and I think his ownership might be reduced.
Yeah, I like that call. I was curious what you're going to say there, but, you know, a guy that can go T6 here twice, I will give serious consideration at $7,100. That's tremendous. I like the Haotong Li call. Another guy that's, you know, it's easy to say, you know, he shouldn't be priced here, but guys that are in the WGCs, it's because they're ranked so high in the world. Haotong Li is there, and yet he's $7,400 in this field. So he's definitely a guy that could be in the top 10, no problem. So I like that quite a bit. When you're talking iron play, and I know he can be tilting at time because he's kind of a little crybaby, but Kevin Na at $7,200 comes into play here. He's made 7 of 10 cuts, including a T36 last year. So I like him as a cheaper option. Two other guys. You mentioned Barnrat. JT Poston is coming and playing really, really good golf and T36, T28, T26, T40, T7. He's made at least five straight cuts. It's his first time here, so keep it with a grain of salt. But $7,100 for a player like that is great. And another guy I mentioned a lot because he's always down here in low prices, but he's made 10 to 15 cuts here, including a T22 last year. He's made four straight cuts on tour, including a T20 his last time out. Brian Gay is only $7,000, and he's another really good iron player that can get it done around the green. So keep an eye on Gay and post it at those cheaper price tags. But it's weird. I usually like this kind of lower seven range. Not as in love with it this week. I like the 6K range a lot more.
Yeah.
But it's the pricing's really weird, and I'm fine with it. I'll make it work. It's just usually I like that a lot more, not so much this week. Speaking of the 6K range, Jesse, I have a lot here, so I'll let you go first. Who do you like down here?
Yeah, this is definitely is going to be tempting. I know you already mentioned it in the Slack chat, but it's going to be tempting to go full on stars and scrubs, fit in as many guys you can up top, and then throw in some of these super low price guys down here. I'll start with at $6,900 with Nate Lashley. He's quickly becoming my dude. He finished eighth in Puerto Rico. The stats just continue to fit with him, hitting a bunch of greens. And I think he'll still be under the radar. He's very accurate with his driver as well. So I like him quite a bit at $6,900. I think Gooch is interesting at $6,800. He finished 26th there last year and coming off a 20th there at the Honda Classic. So I think he's interesting. He played last week, didn't he?
Yep. And he finished 20th on the Classic.
I don't remember seeing him at all on the leaderboard, but
he was really quiet week.
I mean, that's a really quiet top 20.
Yeah, that's a great finish. As I said too, when I was doing my research, I'm like, God damn, he finished 20th, and I didn't even notice him all week.
Literally did not even realize he was in, like, made the cut or even in the field. So, and usually I'm, you know, I scroll up and down the leaderboard and I'm looking at names and I'm seeing stuff because I'm a freaking degenerate and I follow everybody's shot who I'm playing. It's really, really unhealthy. I wouldn't recommend it. Moving down, especially when your guys are out there missing three footers. The best is when you get to watch Martin Keimer lip out those three footers and you're just like, fuck me. Vaughn Taylor at 6,500. He's interesting, man. I mean, 23rd here last year, got a bunch of missed cuts at this place. Did make the cut last year. Last week, he finished ninth at the Genesis Open 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks, almost a month ago now. So I think he's interesting for that price at 6,500. He's been playing pretty well, especially for the discount you get there. And then last but not least, Corey Connors. I think he's interesting. He's just looking at some stats from him. You know, he's missed a lot of cuts in a row after he finished second at Sanderson Farm, but he kind of lines up on some of the singular stats. So super deep GPP play, you know, not going all in on him by any means, but did want to mention him as a play. Another guy, dude, what about, like, why is Ryan Almer and Stewie Cink at $6,200?
No idea. I could play them both, and if they miss the cut, I don't care because they could easily T15, T10 this thing.
Yeah, no idea. So Stewie tilted me to death last week with his MDF.
He tilted the entire Slack chat.
Yeah, I mean, just absolutely terrible round on Saturday. But at 6,200, I mean, like, normally we're getting guys down here who are, like, fresh off the web and have not made a cut yet. And you got Ryan Armour and Stewart Cink down here. Those are, like, semi-cash-worthy plays at $6,200.
Yeah, there are plays I consider cash in 6K, which you rarely ever do. Sink's made 15 and 19 cuts here. Five top 25s, three top 10s. T58 last year, T28 the year before. Like, he's played just fine here. Ryan Armour coming off a T12 last week, got four missed cuts prior to that. He's made two of two cuts here. Cash game viability definitely reigns large. One name he didn't mention, I'm curious about, because we talk about him a lot lately because he's a different golfer now. HV3 is $6,900. I know it's kind of an up and down week with him, but what's your thoughts here?
I mean, course history, did he play here before 2016? I've got one or two made cuts.
One or two made cuts, T34.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's worth a look at 6,900. He can, pretty sure he's decent on par fives, is he not? Maybe he's not. Let's look at him. Yeah, not very good in the field on par fives. I mean, he's a GPP play, you know, only. But yeah, I don't mind him.
Okay. One guy at $6,900, I do like, mentioned him last week. He made a run, but he finished T30 as Sunday wasn't too kind to him. T15 the week before, made two or three cuts here. T7 here last year is Patrick Rogers, another guy that's pretty boom or bust, but I like his upside here. If you want another kind of semi-cash gameplay here, he's not flashy by any means, but Graham McDowell at $6,900, he'll just make cut after cut after cut. He T22 here last year, T28 the year before, two missed cuts on the T10, so he can contend and make cuts. Now, you mentioned Gooch. CT Pan at $6,800 is a very, very interesting one as well. Might come in a little chalky, but 2 of 2 made cuts here, T41 last year. I mentioned this one in the Slack chat earlier when I was doing the research. Marty Party Laird, he's $6,700. We know how tilting he can be. He's coming off a missed cut. He had three straight cuts prior to that, but he has made 9 of 9 cuts here, including a W. T26 last year. He's $6,700. He likes this course quite a bit. Another guy we talked about last week on the show, and he actually had a pretty good week. It was up and down. It looked like he was going to have a really good week, but not quite Vijay Singh-esque. But he still finished T20, and that's Ernie Els. He's getting it done. He's $6,600. He's made three straight cuts on tour.
Past four champion of his last here, too. Five.
Yeah, he's a really sneaky one. Four top tens of this event, 17 to 23 made cuts. So Els at 66 is also kind of cash viable at this kind of event because he's not going to be stupid to try to bomb and gouge it. He's going to play it smart. So yeah. Bazzelli's a GPP guy. Burns at 63. Tons of guys down here. I know I named a lot, but if I had to pick just a couple, I like Rogers, Els, Sink, Armour. Like, those are all guys I can sit there and kind of feel kind of comfortable with, which is weird. And there's the other ones I mentioned. I just wanted to mention for, like, GPP plays if you want to get weird. But there's a lot down here. Like, I'd really want to see the ownership because, you know, you could pick, like, two guys down here and then put a bunch of, like, 8, 9K guys and just let it go, see what happens. Yeah. So it's going to be a really interesting week.
One more guy to go along with your old man narrative is Davis Love III.
Yep.
I mean – you know, again, GPP only, but he's another guy who's been successful around here. He's made 1, 2, 3, 4 cuts in a row here. I mean, he missed a cut in 2012, but finished 14th in 2010, obviously a long time ago. Coming off a made cut at the Genesis Open, you know, he top 10'd in Hawaii. So, you know, he's a boom or bust deal.
Yeah, definitely. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes. Please join us in the Slack chat. It's free. It's fun. There's guys talking all sports all the time, and we'll get in there and do the DraftKings thing for the PGA Tour as we get more information or questions are asked. Let's narrow it down a little bit. Give me three of your top GPP plays. Obviously, there'll be more. Again, that's why you join Slack chat to ask questions like this. But who are three guys you'd be targeting for GPPs right now?
Yeah, Hao Tong Lee would be number one for me. Lashley's on that list as well. And then lastly, I want to say Poulter, but if I played cash, he'd be on my cash team this week too. So the last guy I'll throw out is Luke List.
Yeah, I had Reed, List, and Keegan Bradley were the three I had penciled in there. But Reed and List are like, if you're building GPPs, like, I would almost start with those two because if you're willing to take that risk, because these guys could easily do some damage out there.
Yeah, and should be decently low owned too. At least I think List is. Now, I don't know how highly touted he'll be, but that'll be interesting to see.
Definitely. Now, when it comes to cash, the three guys I'm building around, like, I'm right after we finish recording, I'm going to start a lineup. Molinari, CH3, Ian Poulter. I'll probably throw RCB in there as well. Four of my six guys right there. Like, I'm just throwing that in cash, and I'll build around that. Who are three guys you're looking at for cash?
Yeah, I think Poulter is cash worthy. Glover, I would also put on my cash team. And then, I mean, I don't know. Like, it just kind of depends on where you go with it. But I also like Michael Thompson quite a bit.
Yeah, there's a lot to like with it comes to that. We already talked a lot about the below 6K or in the 6K range, guys. Let's talk about some winners. Who do you think's getting the fancy red sweater this week?
I mean, up top, I really think it's between Rory McIlroy and Justin Rose. I know their odds are super short. So, like a more long shot for me would be Poulter getting the job done here.
Ian Poulter. How much is Ian Poulter on my bookie? Let's see. Where are you at, Ian? He can't be this low. That's disrespectful. No, I must have went
past. Should be about 50, I think, shouldn't he?
Yeah, let me – I'd probably scroll. Yeah, there he is. 50-1. Exactly. Bingo. Ian Poulter at 50-1.
That's pretty much what he opened up at, so.
All right. Some that I like outside of the if you don't go Rose or McIlroy, but you still want to be up top, I do like Bryson at 18-1. I think that's actually decent odds for this field for a guy of Bryson's caliber. I really like Molinari at 35-1. I look at something like that. And then RCB is at 60-1. Maybe I'm just biased because that's that DK price tag, but 60-1 for him. I watched him a lot at Pebble. I was very impressed with how he played golf. He's kind of soft. He's really cold, so he had a beanie, and he's wearing gloves a lot. But, hey, whatever works for you. So I'll let that one slide.
I don't have to worry about that this week, man. Supposed to be nice weather down there.
And he's got a smoke show that follows him around. Well, absolute smoke show.
Most of these guys do.
Yeah, it was impressive.
With the weather, I would keep an eye on kind of the wind forecast. There's potential for a draw bias because it is Florida. But from what we were looking at before the pod started, looks like pretty much 70s warming up kind of as the week goes on. A cold spell moving through because it's freaking 20 degrees where I live right now. So it's going to get a little bit colder in Orlando, but nowhere near where Kentucky is.
Any other final thoughts as people build their lineups for the week or any other approaches to this field?
I don't. Again, just going back to the whole invitational field, like I said, I think it's 125 total that are going to start here. So 70 still make the cut. Getting 6-6 through isn't going to guarantee you anything, I don't think, this week.
Yeah, it's not like weeks past. It's going to be challenging. So cash, I'm still okay with cash this week. It's not like a no-cut event, but just be prepared where you're going to definitely need the 6-6 to make things happen. It's not going to be like 5-6 is getting it done for you. And it'll be a lot of fun. It's going to be interesting. Stars and scrubs. You're going to go more balanced. There's tons of ways to go about it this week. Check out Jesse on Twitter at DFS Golf Gods, the podcast at Always Press DFS, and I'm at BD Intrick. If you can give us a rating or review on iTunes, we much, much appreciate it. And if you want any help, come join us in the Slack chat. It's totally free. But until next time, this was the Always Pressing PGA DFS preview of the Arnold Palmer Invitational. Catch you guys later. The show goes on all night till the morning. We dream.